Welcome to a podcast of the Mike Novak Show. Don't forget that you can listen to Mike live on Sundays from 8 to 10 a.m. on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
Well, Mr. President, the numbers say there's a disconnect between the reality of what you've accomplished and the public's perception. The people think you're failing to be the model of modern reform and change that they were promised.
Really? Mm-hmm. I disagree.
I am the very model of a modern U.S. president, a liberal one at first, but now it seems I have a centrist bent, and though my popularity has waned, I am not hesitant to say I've done quite well so far, although I lacked experience. We pull the country back from cataclysmic economic woes. We're fighting in Afghanistan and focused on our deadly foes. In short, I'm firm about my goals and vow that I shall stick to them. And though I'm black, Joe Biden says I'm clean and quite articulate.
And though he's black, Joe Biden says he's clean and quite articulate. And though he's black, Joe Biden says he's clean and quite articulate. And though he's black, Joe Biden says he's very clean and quite articulate.
In spite of special interest, I have pushed through major health reform. The country was in uproar. Who'd have thought it'd cause a major storm? By fighting to give basic health care to each citizen for free, I inadvertently gave rise and reason to the Tea Party. The issue is divisive. I have made a lot of enemies. A congressman lost his control and even said you lie to me. But listen, because the odds are 10 to 1, it is a certain bet. The only time I lie is when I say I don't smoke cigarettes.
The only time he lies is when he says he's got the cigarettes. The only time he lies is when he says he's got the cigarettes. The job is stressful, so get off his back, he needs a tiny cigarette.
Live from the beautiful Showcase Studios on South Pulaski Road, just across the street from the 53A bus stop and in between Paco's Tacos and Zaka Tacos, it's the Mike Novak Show, Chicago's only locally broadcast green, gardening, and environment program. Heard every Sunday right here on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
Good planets are hard to find. Temperate zones and tropic climes. True currents and thriving seas. Wind blowing through breathing trees. Strong ozone and safe sunshine. Well, good planets are hard to find. Good planets are in demand.
This hour of the Mike Novak Show is brought to you by The Care of Trees. Our business is people and their love for trees. And by Sid's Greenhouses, Chicagoland's premier garden centers. And by WRD Environmental, creating sustainable landscapes for today and tomorrow. He's green, so don't make him angry. You wouldn't like him when he's angry. Here he is, Mike Novak. And they pay me for this, folks. Okay.
More time.
We're still laughing here.
And you do pay me for that. Are you insane?
Yeah,
I love you.
You
for
haven't
it.
Noticed yet?
Nope. That's why I like you so much. I can smell my own. It's the normal people that scare me.
You know, sometimes I just turn Heather loose. just turn her loose and say, do something fun, okay?
I think you just said, do something green. Something with a green.
That's right. Do something green. Yeah, so she went to that. You know, and the scary part is we've got a very fancy guy here in the studio, and we're going through all of our shtick here, you know, on a Sunday morning. But, you know, I like making people laugh. I got no problem with that. And as somebody once said, you can change people's minds a lot easier when they're laughing than when they're crying.
Very true. And that Obama song, that is fantastic. What was that?
That's Ronnie Butler. He's an L.A.-based actor and filmmaker. He appears regularly on Nickelodeon's True Jackson VP. And he wrote, directed, and produced the musical parody Obama, a Modern U.S. President.
Nice.
And obviously that's a Gilbert and Sullivan ripoff. But isn't that funny?
It's hysterical.
And you got to see the video with it, too. You know what I need to do is put that up online. But you can just go to Google. And if you type, I'm sorry, YouTube, rather, it's on YouTube. Go to YouTube and type Obama, a Modern U.S. President, and you'll see that song. I'll play the second half of it at the start of the second hour. And the guy looks like Obama.
Yeah, he does. He really does.
So, very funny stuff. Welcome to the Mike Novak Show on a Sunday, as always. More good news for those of you who have written to me and said, hey, how do I download the podcast to my iPod? We're on iTunes. We are now on iTunes.
How cool is that?
I know. I can go to iTunes and I can type in Bruce Springsteen or Mike Novak and something will pop up. I like that idea. So those of you with your devices who don't have time to sit in front of the computer, you can download it now. Take me with you, please.
I'm begging you, please. Please.
Wherever you're going, please.
Kathleen and I just want him out of the house. Just send him away.
I just want to go places. on the show, big show today, lots of interesting stuff. I mentioned earlier that we had a very important person in the room. His name is Randy Blankenhorn. He was here last year when we were talking about Go to 2040, this idea that we can plan for our future. We don't have to let it just happen to us as we have let a lot of our past happen to us. And I'm talking about not so much politics, but our urban area, how we plan things like food and transportation, infrastructure, water quality, air quality, all that stuff. And Randy is the executive director of CMAP, which is the Chicago Metropolitan Agency for Planning. We'll talk to him in just a second about Go to 2040. Towards the end of the first hour, a very interesting conversation, and I only have a short time with her, which is a shame because she's busy on this big tour. Sandra Steingraber, who grew up in Pekin, wrote a book called Living Downstream, which got turned into a documentary recently, and she's making the tour with the documentary. It's going to be in Chicago on Tuesday. All the information is on my website, MikeNovak.net. Go to this week's show. And today, I believe she's in Normal, and then in Springfield, and then tomorrow in Peoria, and then Tuesday at the Museum of Contemporary Art in Chicago. And it's a really a moving film. I saw it last night. And briefly, Sandra, this is a very interesting story. She grew up in Pekin and at the age of 20 was diagnosed with bladder cancer. And she realized that cancer ran in her family. Here's the problem. She's adopted. But cancer runs in the family. She decided to investigated because she's a biologist. And she started looking at all the things we put in our environment, things I've talked about before, PCBs, atrazine, those kinds of things. And she started investigating it, went all over the country, talking to people and doing her own talks. And the result is the book Living Downstream and the movie Living Downstream. We'll have her on. And Shanda Chavan, I hope that's the right way of pronouncing it. I'll find out from Shanda. Shanda's the director of the film. And then finally, in the second hour, I have talked about this on the show before, Hackmatack. It's not an attack. It's a Hackmatack. And it's perhaps going to be a national wildlife refuge that straddles Illinois and Wisconsin. And right now is a time when you can put in your 2 cents if you'd like to have that happen. And we're going to have Cindy Skrukrud, and I think I got that right. And she's one of the friends of Hackmatack, and we'll talk about where it will be, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife National Wildlife Refuge System is holding hearings this week in Wisconsin. You can also go on their website and make comments. And we don't have a national wildlife refuge within an hour of Chicago. We're one of the few major metropolitan areas in the country like that. So that needs to change. All right, that's all happening on the show. Just to kind of sidle up to the microphone there, Randy Blankenhorn from CMAP. I got to tell you something, Randy. I got invited to this big deal you guys had. And if any of you watch the news in Chicago, you saw this this week. Go to 2040, and I got this beautiful book that you put together. But this is just part of the plan. I mean, this is just the tip of the iceberg. This is how you guys are going to try to sell it and get people to believe in it and do it. But the thing I have to say is that I got invited to this launching of Go to 2040, and it's in Millennium Park, and it was at the Harris Theater. What do they call that?
The rooftop.
The rooftop terrace. Okay, and I went up there, and even as I'm walking up the stairs, I see the tent and everything. I said, I don't know how many people are going to be in here. So I walk in the door, and there's 800 people, and Dick Durbin is on stage giving a presentation. And I went, ooh, this is a big deal. and made me have a realize that you're a fancy guy. And so I'm really honored to have you here. I mean, not only Dick Durbin, but Richard M. Daley was there in the panel you guys had. My only complaint would be Jeffrey Bear from WTTW. Hey, I could have done the moderating the event. You could have called me. Next time, give me a holler there, Randy.
Yeah, it was an interesting day, and I have to be honest, Jeffrey had a tough job keeping those panelists, including Mayor Daley, on track here. But it was fun, and we were glad you were able to join us.
Oh, hey, listen, Jeffrey did a great job. It was a really interesting discussion. I know you guys made the presentation about what Go to 2040 is all about, but some of the most interesting stuff came in that discussion, especially, and I got to say it, Richie Daley, when, I think not running for mayor really agrees with him, because he was in rare form on Wednesday, and he didn't care. It's like, this is what I think. And this is what we got to do. And he laid it squarely on education, which is one of the tenets of your program. But let's get to what, for people who aren't familiar with this, again, the information's on my website, but it's this plan called Go to 2040. And it was put together among the seven counties in the northeastern Illinois area to try to control what we do, how we're going to survive the next 30 years, because we're going to have 2 million more people in the area. To this point, the growth has been kind of haphazard, and we need to figure this out so the quality of life continues to be good in the Chicago metropolitan area. How is it that you got involved in this, because you've had a hard job of pulling, it's not even hurting cats, it's hurting a big barn of cats.
And I think that's what makes it fun. We've talked about the comparison between Daniel Burnham's plan of Chicago in 1909, which was he and Edward Bennett sitting in an office on Michigan Avenue and writing this thing, and us getting, tens of thousands of people involved and talking about what they care about and what's important in their future. And so we like to say we were the scribes. It's not really our plan. We just pulled it all together from what people thought.
Well, yeah, but you still, okay, one of the things you called my attention to was that there are 1,226 different units of government in this area.
Right.
How did you manage to get them all to agree to even try to agree?
Well, I think that's the important part, is that they do agree that it's time that we have to think about things regionally. They get that we're all in this together. My board chairman in his talk said no man's an island, and he's right. We're going to succeed or fail together, and this plan hopefully drives us into that. But it really, Mike, it took some time. It took the 3.5 years that we had putting this together, talking to elected officials, listening to them, telling them what's in it for them, why it's important that they think about their neighbors and they think about the natural environment when they make decisions.
Well, last year you had the Invent the Future workshops, you had kiosks, you had people. We talked about it on my show.
Right.
I went online and put in my 2 cents, and 35,000 other people did. So it's not all from the top down.
Right.
You wanted to make sure that the average citizen, if they cared, had the chance to have their voices heard.
Right. We really feel we gave people an opportunity to do that. And, the bottom-up approach really works for us. We think in many of these policy issues we talk about that our residents are actually ahead of our elected officials and how they're thinking. And so we need to build that grassroots support to move this plan along.
That is Randy Blankenhorn. He is the executive director of the Chicago Metropolitan Agency for Planning, otherwise known as CMAP. Let's talk about a little bit about some of the things you hope to accomplish before 2040, and obviously beyond.
Right.
The Burnham Plan is still in effect 100 years. We just celebrated the 100th anniversary of the Burnham Plan. Why is it not called the Burnham-Bennett Plan? I don't know.
Because I guess Burnham was a better salesman, maybe.
and
he was the guy out front.
Yeah. And we still honor that as much as we can. If I had my way, there are a few buildings in downtown Chicago along the lakefront that would not be there right now. I think we fell down somewhere along the way in the last 30 years. We got a little sloppy with the Burnham Plan. So we have this thing that you've laid out, and you talk about things like, all right, let's start with one, because you mentioned as you walked into the studio, I was showing you the information before we went on air about the Hackmatack National
right.
Wildlife Refuge, and you said, "Oh, that's involved in the plan, and that's part of your parks and open space area." And obviously, we need to preserve open space, because if we don't plan for it specifically, it'll be gone, won't it?
Absolutely. I mean, we are going to continue to develop some in the outer part of our region, and so we need to think about that. Hackmatack is a great example of not only what we're doing looking forward, but really what we've done in the past, too. We talk about Burnham's plan. The Cook County Forest Preserve District and all the land that they own is because of that vision. We have great swaths of land on the periphery to not only for biodiversity, but to connect wildlife, to make sure that we have space available. And so Hackmatack, I think, is the next big step. This plan, we have 250,000 acres of open space right now. This plan says by 2040 we need to get to 400,000 acres, a significant increase in the amount of land.
And what do you count as open space?
We count open space as not only publicly held, but privately held with public right-of-way. We think that's a part of it in the future, that the public isn't always going to be able to afford it. So how do we get land trusts involved? How do we get people and developers as they are building or have property to dedicate some of it to open space? And so we really think that it's a combination of public buying, but also private and developer buying.
Some of the other things you – oh, well, I know the question I was going to ask is, how have entities like the forest preserves – you've got the Cook County Forest Preserve, but other counties have their own forest preserves.
Right.
How have they worked together? Are they a little concerned that they might be overridden by this plan, or do they welcome having somebody helping them do their jobs?
I think mostly they welcome the fact that we're a cheerleader for this, that we think it's important, and that we talk about how we get to these 400,000 acres. They do work together, but the funding for them at the Forest Preserve District is through local taxes.
Mm-hmm.
And so if I live in Lake County, you know, I want to make sure my taxes are going to purchase things in Lake County, but that doesn't mean there's not coordination and cooperation between. Let's face it, these are the only referendum that pass, our open space referenda. Our people still want, they're still willing to vote for, and they're still willing to vote with their pocketbooks to buy more open space in this region.
I have to bring up something that you've probably been aware of, which is going on the East Coast, where the state of New Jersey has blocked an effort to put a new tunnel under the Hudson River because they say, oh, we don't have the money. I was reading an op-ed piece in the New York Times recently where, and I can't remember who wrote it, but whoever it was said, why can't we afford these grand scale projects anymore, especially since it would mean so much economically to an area? Like, it seems rather short-sighted to have the mayor, or rather the governor of New Jersey, say, we can't afford it, let's move on, nothing to look at here, move along, when there are so many people clamoring for something, and it could do so much good so far into the future. Is that the kind of thing you hope to avoid with Go to 2040?
It really is. It's a couple of things. The first is it's about focus. I mean, we have so many priorities, and there is only so much money. And so how do we focus those priorities? But it's also convincing people that you're investing in your future when you make these kinds of investments, whether it's in infrastructure, whether it's in open space, whether it's in schools. It's really a part of how we think about tomorrow, and we've got to make these decisions today.
What about transportation? Obviously, that's a huge part of the plan. From what I was reading, the idea isn't that we're going to be building all these new railways, but maintaining the ones we have and making them more efficient.
That's really the focus. Over 97% of the money that we talk about in this plan, which is a lot of money, $385 billion over the next 30 years for transportation, 97% of that is to maintain and modernize what we have. We think that our system is basically in place, but we need to bring it into the 21st century. We're still looking at rail cars that look pretty much like they did in the 1950s. We're looking at buses that look like they looked in the 70s. We need to talk about what a 21st century transit rider looks like. How do we get them on board, so to speak? What is it that they want to make sure that it works?
That's Randy Blankenhorn from CMAP. We're talking about a plan called Go to 2040. And if you want to read the plan, you can read a summary of it. You can take the time. It's, you know, 17,000 pages long, and you can read the it's big.
It is big.
It is big. It's not 17,000 pages long, but it's big. And if you really care, you should go. But all right, there's folks who are listening, and they're going to be asking, well, wait a second, where's the money coming from for this? You got this grand plan. Who's in? Who's the exchequer here? Who's writing the checks for these things?
Well, I think that we really only talk about raising one tax in this whole plan, and that's the gas tax. We do it for a couple of reasons. Number one is we think that transportation ought to be paid by the users, mm-hmm. and that we need to invest in maintaining our transportation system. We also say that some of that needs to be used for public transit, which it hasn't been in Illinois in the past. So that's really the only tax we talk about raising. What we talk about is how do we make better use of the resources we have? How do we focus them? We seem to spread money around common saying these days is like peanut butter, and everybody gets a little piece, and we really don't solve any problems. This plan is really designed to help focus those decisions and focus those investments so we can see things get done.
Well, the gas tax hasn't been raised since, what, 1991 or something?
1990, yeah.
1990? Yeah. If we don't have enough sense to even keep up with the cost of living, what happens then is you get 20 years down the road where we are now, and everybody says, hey, you can't raise our taxes. What are you doing? Whereas if you had been smart and passed a law that said, hey, it's going to go up with the cost of living, just expect it, we wouldn't be in as much of a hole, certainly in Illinois, because the economic situation is terrible. People would understand. That's the thing that drives me crazy is we want all the goodies in life and we don't want to pay for them. Well, what in the world makes us think these things are for free? And I'm not the first person to say this, but,
I think you're exactly right, Mike. We spent a lot of time last summer out talking about the fact that government isn't free. If you want government service, if you want to purchase new open space and new parks, if you want to invest in infrastructure, it costs money. It doesn't mean, necessarily always higher taxes. Sometimes it means, thinking about where you're spending what you have. But you're right. The bottom line is government isn't free.
And one of the I am quoting Daly again.
That show last week got to you, didn't it?
Yeah.
Last week, on the brain.
Yeah, we did a whole show, all 2 hours last week, Randy, looking at Mayor Daly's green legacy in his 20 years in office. And it was really interesting and pretty spirited and good and bad. He did a lot of good and missed some things. One of the things he said on Wednesday in the forum was that, he said two things that were really important. And the first relates to what we're talking about right now. And he says, we got to get the private sector involved in this. Okay? We can't expect government to pay for everything. And I agree. My feeling is big companies benefit from quality of life issues. So why wouldn't they pony up for this?
And I think you're right, and I think that the mayor is right when he said that on Wednesday, that the private sector has a significant interest in the quality of the communities where they are, where their workers are, where their own families are, and an investment makes sense. We talk about public-private partnerships in a different way, I guess, than a lot of agencies do. You think public-private partnership, and you think about either selling a parking meter or selling the tollway in Indiana for 99 years, and there's really no public oversight. We look at public resources leveraging private resources and having that true partnership where there's, you know, both are investing, both have risk, both have reward, and there's some still public control over the asset that you're trying to deal with.
Are you getting the private sector involved? Have they stepped up to the plate?
I think they have, and I think they're going to more. I don't think they're going to have a choice, as the mayor said and you said.
Yeah.
I think if we're going to actually solve some problems, the private sector has to be a significant player. But we do see significant interest in Illinois companies in what can I do? How can I help? And let's not forget, even Millennium Park, where we held the launch, significant private investment in making that happen.
Yeah, that's an important thing about Millennium Park. We talked about that last week, is maybe that's the model for the future.
Right, and I think it is. You know, it's nice that we're talking about Hackmatack later, and it is an important park. But how do we even there bring the private sector in? Because that's a massive piece of property and piece of land. How do we bring the private sector in to help us protect it?
Well, and one of the things that we'll talk about when in regard to Hackmatack is that there are businesses there, there are homes there, and the people are not just going to be bought out and moved out. They're going to be part of this.
Right.
And so if they can contribute to the and cooperate, everybody benefits.
Yeah, and it's great. I'm from McHenry originally, just barely south of where this is. It's an incredible asset for that part of the region and for that part of the state. And there's real benefit for the people and businesses that live there and work there.
The other thing that Mayor Daley said that was really revealing, he said, why do people move to an area and why do they leave an area? And it's not transportation, it's not trees, it's not quality of the water, it's the quality of the schools. And education is a huge component of Go to 2040.
It is. We believe when we started talking about education, people said, why regional planning agency, why are you talking about this? You're supposed to talk about land use and environment and transportation. And we said, we're talking about the quality of our future. And if we don't do a better job of educating our children, we're going to lose. And I think the mayor reinforced that in
we're
spades.
We're already losing. Let's put it this
right.
way. The decline is apparent.
Yes.
We don't keep up technologically. Just so many ways you can see. I know people who work in the educational system. I know people who write for development houses that create educational materials. And I hear them moan and gripe about the stuff they're being asked to do. And if they're having a hard time writing the materials, I can't even imagine how the kids can learn them. And we need to get this coordinated and get all on the same page.
We really do. And, you know, we've been talking. Our problem in this, we talk about in this plan, is that we have talked about fixing education for 30 years in this state. And we've made almost no progress. It's time to be realistic. It's time to put some people together. And we've said that business has to be out in front of this, that it's tomorrow's workers that we're educating. And they've got to be the one pushing to say, there's got to be a new way. There's got to be a better way. The mayor talked about some of those better ways on Wednesday. But it's time for change. And if we don't, we're in real trouble.
Well, the next step then is you've created the plan. It's been approved by the seven counties and the various agencies involved. How does it move forward? How do you make this happen? Is there the weight of law behind it?
There isn't a lot of weight of law. We don't have a real big stick, Mike, that we carry around with this plan. It really is primarily in getting people to understand and decision makers to understand we need to do things differently.
So what if they, you know, in 2 years say, oh, that was nice. It's yesterday's news. We're going back to our old ways.
Yeah, I think that's a remote possibility, I guess, that would happen.
All right, that you even acknowledge it is a good thing. Transparency is key.
But it's up to us, and it's really up to all of your listeners to say this makes too much sense to ignore. And that's what we've heard over and over again. This plan makes sense to us. Why aren't we moving in this direction? It's going to be up to CMAP and our partners to bring that groundswell of support from the public and then to educate our elected officials and our community leaders on these are the steps. You talked about that long document, the 17,000, really only 400-page document. But it has specific steps for everything to get done. Who needs to be involved? What needs to come first? Where the money comes from out of existing resources. Mm-hmm. So it's more than just a vision. It's really a strategy to move this forward, and it's up to all of us to move this plan forward.
Well, one way that you do that is, for instance, the folks running for office here in Chicago, the mayor, we got a big mayoral election coming up, and you say, what do you think of go to 2040? What are you planning to do to bring Chicago in?
And I think that's right. We had there was a Metropolitan Planning Council luncheon where they had the two Senate candidates in, and they asked them, how would you implement Go to 2040? Which was great, since it wasn't our event that someone else asked that.
Good.
And they had good answers, and they thought it through. And I think the same is true with the next governor, the same is true with the next mayor, the same is true with a number of new elected officials we're going to have in this region. It's up to us to start the education, and then it's up to them to believe.
And the thing that I understand, it's not carved in stone. You're going to be changing things as you go along if certain things aren't working. Now, for instance, I look at it and I'm thinking, I would love to see more about recycling in there. And it's, you know, you talk about energy and conservation of resources and reuse of resources. And I look at it and I say, I wish I'd seen a little bit more about mm-hmm. that, because I've been fighting for good recycling in Chicago for years. So I can still have an influence, I would imagine.
Absolutely. This is a living document. We can't, you know, if it just sits on this nice little book that sits on your coffee table, it's not really doing
it. It is
good.
A nice little book, though.
But it is about that. And we, with the Chicago Community Trust, have developed something called MetroPulse, which is a measurement, how we're going to measure the progress that we're making. And if we're not making good progress, then the question is why. Was the strategy wrong? Was the goal wrong? How do we make changes to this plan to make sure that we're really moving forward? So it's that, and it's what did we miss? There's always things that we could do more. Education is actually one where we think we can do more. There's a number of environmental issues that we didn't flush out as much as people would like. Now's the time to help us do that.
That's Randy Blankenhorn. He's the executive director of CMAP, the Chicago Metropolitan Agency for Planning. I should note that the day after you rolled out the plan, you got word from the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development that their Sustainable Communities Regional Planning Grant Program, that's a mouthful, awarded $4.25 million to CMAP to spur implementation of the plan. That's a start.
It's a huge start. It was nice to hear. We thought, what's the letdown going to be on Thursday after Wednesday's event? And then this came out. So we're really pleased, because it is about the implementation. This funding helps us help local communities implement the plan.
Well, here's what we're going to do. A year from now, 6 months from now, I don't know. You're going to be back, right?
Absolutely.
I want to keep track of this, because it's too important. This plan is too important. I mean, it would be nice that in 100 years, if people looked back and said, woo, thank goodness we did go to 2040. And it might be called something else by then. Who knows? But I'm hoping it works, because things are getting crowded. And the resources are becoming scarcer and scarcer.
They are. And really, that's what we hope, too, that we talk a lot about. We'll know if we're successful 50 years from now. Mm-hmm. And so we need to make decisions today. We need to move on today. Part of the problem that we have is we tend not to make decisions. It's not that we make bad ones all the time. We tend to just ignore them.
Oh, you've seen me in action, haven't you? Okay.
So it really is. Time will tell, and we hope that we really have laid something out here that'll help.
Well, thank you, Randy. I appreciate it. And like I said, you've got a standing invitation. Anytime you want to come back, we'll chat some more about this.
Thanks, Mike.
All right. Rick DeMaio weather's coming up in just a sec. It's fall decorating time at Sid's Greenhouses and Garden Center. And this week, the savings are mum-tastic. I said that a few weeks ago, and some guy wrote, that's not a word. Yeah, I know it's not a word, but they're still mum-tastic. Sid sold out the first several crops of fall garden mums. See? They go fast. But a new batch has just arrived at their stores, and they're all on sale, from the popular grab-and-go size all the way up to the majestic Sid's Awesome Garden Mum. In addition, you'll save 50% on their entire stock of fall and Halloween decor, up to 75% on all remaining nursery stock, and perennials are buy one, get one free. There's still time to plant spring-blooming fall bulbs. Hey, the ground's warm. It's been warm out there. You got lots of time, but don't delay, because the selection will get less, well, yeah, it gets worse and worse. I guess that's the way to put it. If you wait too long, and SIDS has a huge selection available, you know, tulips, daffodils, iris, and more. Plant them now for a spectacular color display next spring. And here's a helpful tip. When you bring in your houseplants from the patio in the next few weeks, don't bring in any bugs or fungus. Do a couple of things. You can hose them down, which is not a bad idea, or pre-treat them with Fertilome Triple Action Plus. It's an organic insecticide, miticide, and fungicide all in one. SIDS, Chicagoland's premier garden centers, are located in Palos Hills and Southwest Highway and in Bolingbrook on Napier Plainfield Road at Hassert Boulevard, or online at SIDSonline.com. Rick DeMille weather in 60 seconds. Right now, you need to know that the September-October issue of Chicagoland Gardening Magazine is on the stands, and you need a copy if you have a Zone 5 garden. In this issue, there are stories about two gardens that are a cut above the rest, one in Downers Grove and one in Elmhurst. Now, I'm pleased to say that the Downers Grove garden is the handiwork of a couple of friends of this show, Mickey and Bruce Beckman. Miss Mickey, as she is known, has inspired kids to read for decades. You know, we were talking about education earlier. She's doing the right thing, and her garden inspires just about everybody else. In Elmhurst, Rob Abernathy and Peter Vamvikas discovered that when you're restoring a vintage 1905 building, it brings out the best in neighbors who have contributed plants, building renovation advice, and friendship. The result is a house and garden that are the pride of the community. The magazine has how-to articles, plenty of gardening and advice, and of course there's my column on the inside back page. My words inspire kids not to read. I don't know. Maybe. Chicagoland Gardening Magazine. See, Randy, now Randy's really, he's going to duck out of here and go, ooh, that guy is crazy. Chicagoland Gardening Magazine is on newsstands all over the area. But why don't you have a subscription? Go to ChicagolandGardening.com or call 888-265-3600. 888-265-3600. Now, I know that this, no, that's not the one I wanted. Hold on a second. I think I got the right music to get into Rick DeMille weather. This is a guy that never does me wrong, Rick DeMille. And am I supposed to now sing the Wisconsin fight song, Rick?
Oh, you betcha. Well, whatever.
That's it, exactly.
No, that's the alma mater. Isn't the one you want? Hey, listen, any team that beats up on Ohio State is all right with me.
I know. Well, you know what? Wisconsin's got many fight songs. It used to be... they would do the whole Budweiser thing, and at the end they'd say, when you say Wisconsin, you said it all. Anything that has to do with beer and brats works with Wisconsin.
Anything with a brat. Were you at the game?
You know what? Believe it or not, I had tickets for it, but I had to give them up because they were, I don't know, they were like $175 a piece. And
yikes.
Somebody who I actually went to a bowl game, believe it or not, back in 1984. He's from Boston. He flew in to do some business in Chicago on Wednesday and flew out both of his sons, 12 and a 16-year-old, on Friday. So we met up at in Wrigleyville. We had dinner, and he and I were talking about old college times and going to the football games, and his sons were like, you know, first time in Chicago and going up to Madison for the football game. And they were on the 50-yard line, and he sent me a couple of pictures and a couple of, you know, text during the game. And at the end of the game, you really didn't see the field. It was just all people with red shirts covering up the big W there. That was quite a win. So and today they're on the way up to Lambeau Field to see the Packers. So talk about football weekend.
It is football weekend. Overdosing on football on the weekend.
But, And you know, like, it's amazing because when you think about the weather that we've had recently, I don't ever remember it being this perfect during the fall for a long period of time. Even though we had a couple of cool weekends, do you remember ever it being this sunny and this dry for this long a period of time? It's pretty amazing.
No, it has been just fabulous. And, you know, if you graphed the temperatures lately, they're on that nice, slow slide, getting a little cooler, cooler. When does the other shoe drop?
You know what? It's amazing because even though we keep trying, all the long-range models continue to try to cool us off in like the 6-10 day period, and you get to like day 2 or 3, and it's not as cool. And you know, we just had the remnants of Hurricane Paula moving through the Yucatan, and that has obviously kept much of the eastern half of the United States warmer again. But yet we've had this big system go through New England, which dropped the 4 to 6 inches of snow above 2,000 feet. Northern sections of Vermont, New Hampshire, I know a lot of people up there were worried that their fall foliage was going to get ripped off the trees a week ahead of schedule, because obviously in that part of New England, the Northeast, that's one of their biggest lures of tourism is people going and look at the fall foliage. And I was just checking online here, Mike, and nearly every county now in the state of Wisconsin is past peak, and almost all the counties north of Interstate 80 in Illinois are at peak, and this is almost 2 weeks ahead of schedule. So it's been remarkable. I was thinking because a couple of years ago, I remember when the Cubs were in the postseason. But you remember how odd it was to see the ivy on the walls actually turning color? No one had ever seen that before.
No one had ever seen.
Yeah, it's kind of.
I know. They hadn't seen it for centuries. Yeah, the ivy turning color.
The ivy just died. Yeah. I just thought it died at the end of September.
Yeah, everybody. Yeah. They cut it back. Yeah, just get rid of it.
And it was funny because when my friend had his two sons in here, we were walking around Wrigley Field. He goes, "Oh wow, this is a cool old stadium, kind of like Fenway Park." He goes, "Rick, when was the last time the Cubs won the World Series?" And I went, 1908. He goes, 1908, that's over 100 years.
Yeah, you can do the math.
I know, and it was kind of funny. I said, yeah, and it was kind of cool because, a couple of years ago when they were in the playoffs, particularly the NLCS, you can actually see the ivy turn color. I'm looking out the window now at a couple of places where there's ivy on the wall, and the ivy's turned color, and this has been a perfect string of warm weather so far. Temperatures about 4 degrees above average, even though we did get a little bit of rain on Tuesday. We've only had 2 days of rain this month, 2 out of 16. And since July 31st, only one day where we've had a half inch of rain or more. And the pattern for this week, actually, even though we may get a little bit of rain tomorrow night into Tuesday, not a lot of precipitation coming in our direction. And, I know that there's still a lot of people on the eastern side of Cook County, which haven't, received the killing frost or killing freeze, still watering their marigolds and plants and other things like that. And why not, right? Even though it's October 17th, you might as well keep going.
You can keep those going. But I'm going to say trees and shrubs, especially because it's been really, really dry. I mean, we had that one rain event last week, but that didn't
that kind of stuff gets into the first inch of soil and basically gone the next day. So.
Right.
The bottom line, sunshine today, obviously gorgeous day. Not as warm as yesterday. We topped that at 71, probably up to about 63 or 64. Normal high is about 62. And then we'll cloud up tomorrow. I think we'll see a little bit of rain late tomorrow night and into Tuesday. But now it looks like we actually, get back into what's called a split flow, where the jet is all the way across New Mexico and southern areas of Colorado, and then all the way across western sections of Canada. When you have the split flow, you basically have no weather in the Midwest. And it looks dry for Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and even into Sunday of next week. Temperatures are a little bit cooler, probably only low to mid-60s, but that's normal for this time of the year. So for those people who want rain, if we get anything tomorrow night into Tuesday, maybe about 0.2 of an inch, but other than that, basically near to slightly below normal temperatures by the end of the week. And still, Mike, a long-range forecast doesn't really have much in the way of any cool, wet weather coming in our way until maybe sometime late next week. The pattern does begin to shift a little bit, and usually when that pattern shifts, You kind of get locked into it for a couple of weeks. So
okay.
Who knows, two or three weeks from now, we may be talking about it raining too much, right?
I doubt it. But you never know. Okay, thank you. Enjoy the nice weather. Enjoy the colors. And you and I will talk next week, buddy.
Okay, Mike, take care.
You too. Bob X wants to know if you are as smart as the critters who want to chow down on the plants in your yard. Okay, we're not going to compare IQ scores. If you're like me, you hate to lose that contest. But there are some things you need to be aware of when you do battle with neighborhood critters. For instance, you can put plants in your yard that some sources consider, quote, critter resistant. I'm using air quotes here. However, like everything in life, that's a relative concept. Deer, rabbits, and other critters have preferences like people do, and when foliage is in short supply, they will eat anything they can sink their teeth into. Here's something else you need to know about, and that's the deer population. Have you been paying attention in your area? Also, are you on a deer trail? That might not be the smartest place to plant certain species. That's one of the reasons you might not want to guess how to protect your plants, but talk to the experts at Bob-X. Give them a call, 800, it's toll free, 800-792-4449, 800-792-4449, or you can go to bobx.com to get the number. Of course, in addition to online, Bob-X is available only at your local independent garden center. For example, Gobert's in South Barrington, Illinois, Village Farm Stand in South Holland, Illinois, The Chalet in Wilmette, Illinois. Remember, plants thrive and survive with Bob-X. Here's a tip from the Care of Trees. If you have mature trees on your property and you're worried about fall storms, you should know that the Care of Trees has 24-hour emergency service. Storms can result in broken limbs or even downed trees, and many people don't know how dangerous it is to remove or prune those trees yourself. What's worse, trees can fall on cars, other structures, power lines, or even other trees. That complicates removal even more. The point is that the Care of Trees offers a 24-hour emergency service to assist in performing the job safely while minimizing further risk to your property. The Care of Trees has been serving Chicagoland for 60 years and shares your enthusiasm for the many ways trees enhance the quality of your life. Make the Care of Trees your permanent partner in enhancing the value of your landscape. Invite the certified arborist at the Care of Trees to take a look. See thecareoftrees.com or call 847-394-4220. The Care of Trees. Their business is people and their love for trees.
Want to make a positive move in the housing market? Replace your siding and windows. You'll improve your home's look and energy efficiency, too.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687 for your remodeling and energy needs. Siding, windows, solar and wind power, and more. Rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
Fall is planting time. Put that in your head. So plant yourself over at Lurvy Landscape and Garden Center in Des Plaines and get some great deals this week. We're supposed to have the ding-ding. In the 20% off corner, we have perennials, grasses, vines, ground covers, and hydrangeas. In the 30% corner, we have trees, broadleaf, evergreens, trellises, and fountains. In the 50% off corner, we have pottery and fish. And in the 75% off corner, we have tropical hibiscus, jasmine, gardenia, and most roses. Okay, I think we're out of corners. But in the elusive free corner, we have a bag of Bayer tree and shrub planting mix, which you will receive with a $25 purchase. Lurvy's also has a wide selection of bulbs and mums and pansies, cabbage and kale, the hot pink perennial, the Invincible Spirit hydrangea. It's hardy enough to make it through the winter, and Lurvy's is still bringing in fresh material. That's the good thing. So plants haven't been sitting around the nursery. You get fresh pickings. And don't forget your Halloween goodies, pumpkins, gourds, cornstalk, straw, and more pumpkins. So plant yourself at Lurvy Landscape Supply and Garden Center, 2550 East Dempster in Des Plaines. For hours and more info, call 847-824-7411, 847-824-7411, or visit them online at lurveys.com. That's LURVEYS.com. It's the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. We're going to do this quick because I have on the line right now, and Sandra's online too, right, Heather? Sandra, are you with me there?
I am. Hello.
Hi, Sandra. It's great to talk to you. I hope I get a chance to meet you in person. And that is Sandra Steingraber, and she is the author of the book Living Downstream. I saw the movie last night, all right, and was really moved by it and what you're doing. I mentioned earlier that, you know, you were diagnosed at the age of 20 with bladder cancer, and as I pointed out earlier, you realized that cancer ran in your family. Problem is, you're adopted.
Right.
And that meant it probably wasn't heredity, it was environmental. What happened from that point?
Well, I was diagnosed with bladder cancer at the age of 20, and I learned from my diagnosing physician that that kind of disease is really a quintessential environmental cancer, meaning we know more about the environmental links to bladder cancer than almost any other kind of cancer. And my aunt went on to die of the same kind of cancer that I had. My mother was in treatment for metastatic breast cancer at the same time. She was diagnosed in her mid-40s, and I was just 20. So we were cancer patients together. But as you point out, I'm adopted. And so as a young biologist, I knew that what ran in families doesn't necessarily run in genes. So eventually my life's work as a biologist came to be directed toward the question of what role the environment plays in the story of human cancer.
And you wrote your book in 1997, Living Downstream.
Right. And for that, I began the work as a postdoctoral fellow at Harvard and began that work researching the environmental links to cancer in the Harvard Medical School Library. A year later, I moved into my sister's basement in my hometown in central Illinois and became a kind of environmental detective in my own home community. So Living Downstream is really two books in one. It tells this, you know, the best story I can as a biologist to summarize the link, what we know about the state of the evidence for links between cancer and the environment. But it's also a love story. It tells the story of my own hometown, some of the environmental problems there, my own cancer diagnosis, and the way in which I became just one data point in a cluster of cancers in the downstate Peoria area.
Yeah, and you're a native of Pekin, right?
I am.
And what you point out, well, let me say one thing about the documentary. You see a lot of documentaries about the environment, and usually it's, we're doing this research and we're looking at this and this is very dangerous and why don't we do something? And there's some of that in this documentary, but there are a couple of things that really make it stand out. One, it tells your personal story. You're the center of this. And two, it's beautifully shot. How do you pronounce Shonda's last name?
Shonda Chavanis.
Chavanis. Okay, and Shonda Chavanis shot it, and you know it's that's what moves you is the personal story. Did that make you uncomfortable to be the center of this?
No, just the opposite actually, because I think that too often cancer patients feel this kind of enforced silence about the status of their health, because in fact, a lot of the experience of cancer is not that it's in front of you at the present moment or that it's behind you forever, but that you occupy this place of uncertainty, in which case you're not sure what the next pathology result will be or what the next scan will show. And so by pulling back the veil of secrecy and taking a film crew into the hospital with me, into one of my cancer checkups in which the interior landscape of my body is projected on a large screen television, I felt like I was no longer alone, that I was bearing witness to something that we all go through as cancer patients, but we don't necessarily talk about. So I was just really honored that this incredibly talented filmmaker gave me the opportunity to translate the story that's in the book into a visual media. And of course, as a writer, I try to bring the most lovely language to my writing to keep my readers turning pages on a story that might be a difficult one to hear. I want the language to be as lovely as the landscapes I'm describing. And I think Shonda does that so brilliantly in film. As you say, it's beautifully shot. So I'm so lucky.
And Shanda's on the other line. Hi, Shonda. How are you?
Hi.
Hi, Mike. I'm very well, thanks. How are you?
Okay, good. Now, the way we set this up, unfortunately, Sandra's got to run off to another interview when we get to news in just a couple of minutes. But, Shanda, you'll be back after 10 o'clock and talk a little more about this. So I'm going to skip you at the moment, and I apologize for that, because I really want to talk to Sandra about one thing that really struck me about the movie. You know, you talk about some of the chemicals that are in everything, in our water and our air, and two of the main ones are PCBs and atrazine. I had a woman on the show who grew up surrounded by farms and realized her kids were sick, couldn't figure out why, and then started studying about atrazine. Your cousin is in this movie, is a farmer, and he seems so nice and so reasonable, and you obviously love him a lot. In some ways, though, aren't those the most dangerous people, the ones who are reasonable and then continue to use these products?
Dangerous. Well, the chemicals are certainly dangerous, and the people can...
All right, you know, and that was a bad way to put that, but you're right. The chemicals are still dangerous, and that's what's frustrating is that he's very reasonable about, you know, I can't compete if I don't use atrazine with my crops, and yet it might be killing us.
It might be killing us, and of course the European Union decided... based on the evidence that we already have about atrazine and its ability to tinker with our hormones and possibly contribute to the story of human cancer, the European Union has decided to ban atrazine already. And we here on this side of the Atlantic take a look at those same data, and we keep reviewing it, and the EPA, in fact, is doing another review of atrazine because there's even more evidence now, especially linking it to pregnancy loss. And so it's really interesting to me as a biologist to see two different cultures reach two different conclusions based on the evidence.
And it's the same evidence, basically,
and
right?
The same evidence, right. And so farmers in both Europe and America are not the problem. The problem is that we have constructed an agricultural system that isn't feeding people, that's growing corn for ethanol, for export, mm-hmm. confinement operations, and the only way to do that on a large scale is to use chemicals. And the only way to grow corn year after year is to use this 51-year-old chemical, atrazine, that came on the market the same year I was born, 1959, when we didn't have a lot of information about it.
And I have to cut you short there, and I'm sorry we can't talk more, but I'll be talking with Shanda after the news. Good luck, and the movie showing in Chicago, we'll talk more about it.
Thanks.
I'm too ambitious. Critics say my expectations are too grand. But if we cannot rise to this occasion, I think no one can. It's tough not pleasing everyone. I'm just a man. I do my job. If Sarah Palin shoots her mouth off one more time, so help me God. The corporate greed, the BP spill, and rising unemployment costs. Extremist right fanatics, immigration, where to put a mosque. And in between, I kiss Michelle and hang out with my daughters, too. I even walk the dog sometimes and clean up stinky doggy poo.
The hardest thing about his job is cleaning up the doggy. He needs the free roll and he's also picking up his doggies. He's got the best work for the bum and yet he's stripping stinky doggy poo.
I hearken unto Lincoln and I still believe in compromise. I just require sanity and reason from the other side. So take my word and don't believe a single thing Fox News has said. I am the very model of a modern U.S. president.
So take his word and don't believe a single thing Fox News has said. He is the very model of a modern U.S. president.
Would you please welcome, from a place called Winnipeg, the Guess Who?
This hour of the Mike Novak Show is brought to you by The Care of Trees, our business's people and their love for trees, and by Sid's Greenhouses, Chicagoland's premier garden centers, and by WRD Environmental, creating sustainable landscapes for today and tomorrow. Here he is again, Mike Novak.
And once again, I should tell you what you heard at the top there, a modern U.S. president. The very model of a modern U.S. president is a piece that Ronnie Butler did, and you can find it on YouTube. It's pretty funny stuff. You should see the visuals that go with that. Welcome to the second big hour of the Mike Novak Show, and we're in the middle of a conversation. I have to explain why it happened the way it happened. And right now on the line I have Shonda Chavanis, and she's with the People's Picture Company, the PPC. She's the director of Living Downstream. If you heard before the top of the hour, if you were listening, Sandra Steingraber was on, and she's the one who wrote the book, and it's her experience. But Shonda, it's lovely to have you on the program.
Thanks very much for having me, Mike.
And what's going on, of course, you guys are on this big Illinois tour right now. Where are you right now, in Normal?
Yes, right now I'm in Normal, and we're having a screening at the Normal Theater at 1 p.m. today, and then we shuffle our way down to Springfield for a 7 p.m. screening in Springfield.
Springfield, and then tomorrow it's Peoria, and then Tuesday it's at the Museum of Contemporary Art here in Chicago. I know some people were tweeting about that to us, and you can always go at Mike Now is my handle on Twitter, at Mike Now, N-O-W. And the Museum of Contemporary Art showing in Chicago is at 7 p.m. on Tuesday. Advance tickets are available online or by phone from Brown Paper Tickets. I've got the links to that. Or in person at Women and Children First, great bookstore on the north side of Chicago in Andersonville. And in Peoria, it's at 7 o'clock tomorrow. And advance tickets are available online, in person, or by phone from the Peoria Theater. And again, the links are all there. So here you guys are. You and Sandra, you know, we've got Shonda and Sandra, and it's hard to keep that straight, you know?
I know, everyone has a hard time, so if you call me Shandra or some other hybrid, that's okay.
Yeah, that's, actually, I talked to your publishers, and I kept saying Shandra, it's Shanda. Oh, okay, sorry, yeah, okay. Where did Sandra go for an interview? Is she in a are you guys in a studio down there?
She's in a studio. WJBC is the station that she's interviewing with, so she's doing that right now.
Yeah. So when I talked to your publisher, she said, "Well, Sandra's got an interview at 10:10,
yes.
So you can't. You can only talk to her before then, but you can talk to Shanda. And so why not? You know, because you got to work with Sandra firsthand on this. What, you know, I have to ask about, I mean, you get involved in the minutia of doing a film, but what's the overall feeling you're left with in working with Sandra on this?
It's a great feeling. You know, I read her book in 1998. It came out in 97, so I read it a year later when it came out in paperback. And I loved it, and I read it several more times. And, you know, whenever you read a book, you always kind of imagine the person who wrote it, and you think that you know them based on what they've written in the book. And I really did admire her, so I was really excited to be able to make the film. And then what really surprised me is we've had a very close collaboration. So she commented on the different versions of the film, and, you know, she was a scientific advisor on the film, of course, and she's a subject in the film. But even now, we're still working together. So on the screening tour, we're putting out an educational DVD. We're putting out some written guides that she's helping me by writing some pieces for. So it's kind of this ongoing collaboration that's really been exciting and interesting and challenging.
And, of course, you said you read the book several times, and then you shoot this. Just by doing this, you've probably learned a lot that you didn't know and that you can now pass along to others.
I have. I mean, what's interesting is from Sandra's book, she writes in such a clear way that anyone can understand very complicated science. She has a very visual way of representing chemicals and representing different systems in our bodies. And I've learned a lot. You know, that's one thing that I love about being a documentary filmmaker is you get to kind of delve into people's lives and delve into their work and learn quite a bit about their work. I mean, you know, Sandra always gets the scientific questions and I let her answer those as much as possible. But I do feel that I have a familiarity with the material for sure.
I haven't read the book, but I've seen the documentary. What I'm struck by in the documentary, in addition to this being a first-person story, is that she kind of lays out, and you, as the director of the film, lay out the information, and then you don't beat people over the head with it. You pretty much say, all right, here's what we found out. What are you going to do about it? Or,
yeah.
You know, are you going to do something about it? And it's not getting people with torches and pitchforks in the street, but it's just saying, you know, this is really a serious problem. And it's almost apparently her hero is Rachel Carson, mm-hmm. who kind of did the same thing, went into Congress when she was dying of breast cancer and testified and laid it out, and as she did in her book, A Silent Spring, and said, here it is. What are you going to do about it? Mm-hmm. And fortunately for us, they did something about it. Our Congress was much more responsive in those days, it seems. The EPA got formed, and DDT got banned, and other things happened. Do you see our system being able to handle this in the same way now?
Well, I think that you know, now I'm Canadian, so but we do have similar systems. There are differences, but I would say that the in the 70s, there were several chemicals banned, and there were a few more chemicals banned in the 80s. But, you know, this kind of chemical-by-chemical way of doing things maybe isn't the most efficient way. We should be looking at kind of, I think, broader regulatory reform as they're doing in the European Union, where they are testing specific chemicals. But even just by requiring manufacturers to submit more information about the chemicals. Some manufacturers are just withdrawing chemicals from the market, specifically pesticides in the European Union. And that has been happening quite a bit because they realize that they won't pass the safety standards, so they just voluntarily withdraw them, which is kind of an interesting way of doing things. So I think chemical by chemical won't really get us there quickly enough. There are, you know, 80,000 synthetic chemicals registered for use in the United States.
And it also doesn't help when we say chemicals.
Yeah.
I mean, because that's not specific enough. And when you say PCBs or atrazine, now we're getting a little more specific because we know what those specific chemicals do, or 2,4-D, which is used in lawn care. You know, you talk about Canada being somewhat similar, but in a sense not. You're probably familiar with the film A Chemical Reaction, I would take it.
I haven't seen it.
Yeah. All right. Well, I have several times. And it's one of my issues on my show about people using pesticides on their lawns.
Mm-hmm.
And you know that in Canada, it started in the little town of Hudson, Quebec, and spread to the province, and then the province of Ontario and British Columbia, and I guess Canada's working its way towards banning all of what they call cosmetic pesticides on lawns. And it was upheld by your Supreme Court 9-0. All right. I don't mm-hmm. see that happening in America, in the United States, rather.
Well, you know what a big difference, I think, was, is that the Canadian Cancer Society, which is our equivalent of the American Cancer Society, was very much behind those pesticide bans. And so they helped to advocate on behalf of the smaller municipalities and then the provinces, and really worked to support that ban based on the research that had been done linking pesticides to brain tumors in children. And so the Canadian Cancer Society has taken a proactive stance on prevention. And I think that that is the kind of thing that needs to happen here in order for change to occur. Some of the big organizations need to kind of really look at the research.
Well, maybe the American Cancer Society.
Yes. Well, that would be great. I mean, they have a very, very conservative approach to cancer, I would say. They're very focused on treatment, which is, of course, important, but preventing would be great.
Yeah, prevention would be. Isn't that kind of a good thing, too? Oh, dear. Well, the film is also shot beautifully.
Thank you.
Nice job on that. Do you handle camera yourself, or do you turn it over to somebody?
I don't. I work with directors of photography. So there were two on this film, Benjamin Gervais and Marco Veltri. And Marco is actually with us on the screening tour, taking different publicity photos for us of us, you know, being at all these screenings. And they're two really great guys to work with.
I just got tweeted by a regular listener from the show, who is Chicago Tree MD, Scott Jameson. Chicago Tree MD is his handle. He says, I did my MS at Michigan State, the campus where Rachel Carson describes robins dropping over from DDT. Mm-hmm. It was used on elms for Dutch elm disease control. So it's you know, that it's a reminder of some of the toxicity of some of these things. And what's next for you guys? All right, you're going to do the tour. You're going to be in Chicago on Tuesday, and you're going to be talking to the audience as well, right?
Yes, that's right. So we'll have the screening of the film at 7, and then we do a question and answer session with Sandra and myself. And then after that, Women and Children First are hosting a book signing of the second edition of Living Downstream. Sandra rewrote all the scientific portions with all the newest evidence, and it was just released in April of this year to coincide with the film. So she'll be signing books for everyone who's
interested.
That's
great. Well, see, I love Women and Children First. Great bookstore.
They've been wonderful to work with.
I'm not surprised. I'm not surprised a bit. And maybe I'll slide on over there on Tuesday. So that's after the showing? So you guys are going up to the bookstore then?
No, we're
Before.
Bookstore's coming to the museum.
Oh, they're coming.
So they'll bring their stock there, and we'll do everything right at the MCA.
Okay. Let's see here. All right, another one from Chicago, Tree MD. 40 years later, we found DDE, a form of DDT in the soils under those elms during a lab class I took there.
Mm-hmm.
So this stuff, a lot of the stuff doesn't go away, as you know, with PCBs.
We haven't
used it in 30 years, and we're still dredging it out of our harbors.
Yes, and you know that there's a cleanup that we profile in the film in New Bedford, which is in Massachusetts, very close to Cape Cod, and you know that cleanup could be going on for 65 years. The EPA is doing it, and they're working very hard, but it's really difficult once you release these chemicals into the environment to get them back. It's really tricky, and so, you know, the trick is really not to release them in the first place.
Yeah, well, good luck on that. Well, we're moving forward. I would like to be positive about this and hope that films like Living Downstream will affect people and affect change and will, you know, get them to speak out to their representatives in Congress. Shanda Chavannis, thank you very much. She's the director of Living Downstream. And again, one more time, it's going to be at the Museum of Contemporary Art in Chicago on Tuesday at 7 p.m. If you're within the sound of my voice near Peoria tomorrow night, it'll be 7 p.m. at the Peoria Theater. Much luck to you. Good luck. And I hope the film does very well for you.
Thanks very much, Mike. I appreciate it.
All right. Take care now.
Okay. Have a good day.
You too.
Thanks.
It's the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. And how are you, Heather Fry?
I am lovely, Mike Novak. How are you?
Okay.
My cord is caught. Now I'm better. I can sit up.
Don't choke
yourself. My headphones aren't caught there.
I felt like I should say hi because the last week, you know, you didn't get to get a word in edgewise because we had so many people in the studio.
It's a refreshing change.
For me.
Sometimes you just got to button up.
I know.
I do know when to stop talking, really.
Yes, you do. You're very good. But I thought people should know that you worked hard behind the scenes last week.
Thank you.
You did. And this week, you know, we started off with Randy right in the studio and had to get right into that because I'm always running late and then trying to shoehorn in Sandra and Shonda. It's life in radio, baby.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You don't want it to get boring and just have us talking the whole time, do you? I mean, you got to have some substance.
We might have to do that at some point. I'm
in the wintertime, we'll do something fun.
Yeah, when people aren't gardening,
right.
And not doing. I'm trying to get the frozen robins back on the show this year.
Yeah,
you like that.
I have questions about the houseplants I received. I got gifts last week for buttoning my trap and doing a good job. I left with plants.
We didn't bribe her. Beth Botts was unloading some plants and brought some in for Heather. And I've got a couple for you as well because you're moving into new digs.
Yes, I am.
And you need plants.
I do. So I need to know like where they go, what kind of light they need. Like I don't want to kill them because they came from really good gardeners. So they're very healthy and beautiful. And I don't want to be the thing that fails them.
That
I don't
want to
let
too.
Them down.
What are the questions you have about your plants?
Just what kind of sunlight they need. Like, should they be in a really sunny spot? Should they have indirect sunlight? And then I know one was the spider plant. The second plant, I know you guys told me what it was because there was debate.
Right.
And I can't remember what it was.
It's what they call a Chinese evergreen.
Okay.
That's the common name. And it's bright indirect light, basically.
Because they're all basically crammed in the kitchen window now, because that's the only window that gets good light in the current apartment.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I'm going to find out in the next few weeks like which windows will be most suitable for plants.
Yeah. A lot of plants that you have indoors, tropicals, don't like bright. They don't like direct sunlight.
And I can keep them. They'll live through the wintertime inside.
Yeah, but there are certain things you got to keep in mind about indoor plants. A, you don't water as much in the winter.
Okay.
Because they can't transpire as quickly because there's not as much sunlight and there's not as much heat. Now, that's going to be another consideration. How is your apartment going to be heated? Is it forced air or is it radiator? Makes a huge difference.
Mm-hmm.
And apartments and homes dry out tremendously in the winter. So you need to be aware of humidity levels. I mean, there's a lot of things about keeping plants going over the winter. Usually it's not that difficult if you've got any kind of light at all. You can usually make it happen, even in a really cool. I mean, our house is, as you know, the coldest house in Chicago. And part of the reason.
There's a bad joke there that I'm not touching.
Okay.
It's like just see you yelling at the kids on the block, like crazy old man, like, get off my lawn.
I'm so cold, I don't want you kids here. That's why I'm cranky, because I'm cold. And my plants get cranky, too. But, you know, I'm used to it. I know I haven't brought in all my plants yet because the weather's been so nice. I've had them out back. I've got my hibiscus, which is still blooming out back. And I know that the second I bring it indoors, about 60% of the leaves are going to turn yellow and drop off. And you don't panic when that happens. You know that's the response to the lowered light levels.
Okay. Because one of them does have a little yellowing on some of the leaves, like one now.
Well, all leaves are going to yellow at some time or another. I mean, it's pretty hard to keep your plants perfect. But basically, you know, what we'll do is maybe we'll go through it plant by plant, and as you experience problems, we'll educate you and
my first
listeners.
Time with houseplants through the winter. First time ever. This is an inaugural run. Yeah.
And how many do you have now?
I went from 0 to 5.
Where'd you get 5? Beth gave you 2.
Beth gave me 2. Wally at Pesci's gave me 2, and a girl who works here gave me an aloe plant.
All right, aloes are going to be the easiest.
Yeah.
Don't do anything.
Yeah, I've just
throw
just
it in the window.
Water it once a month, and that's it.
Water it once a year, basically.
Well, it started shriveling up. Like
it needed water, so
it was like once a month. I've just been throwing it some water, and it seems to like that.
That's about right.
So I'm going to get you a nice.
I got to get you a ZZ plant. That's one of those plants you don't ever need to water.
Nice. I like low maintenance.
but I also have a calancho for you, and people. Will recognize calanchos because in the summer you see them. They have these really brightly colored little flowers and dark green leaves, and they're not very big plants. But I have a calancho that's a relative to the ones that you put in the pots with the brightly colored flowers. And it's got pale leaves, pale fuzzy leaves. And it's another one of those plants that you don't water. You just neglect it. You leave it and let it sit. And don't do anything.
Nice.
And I'm going to give you that.
Awesome.
Because I create.
That's my favorite kind.
I cut it back in the spring and I, you know, just jammed one of the stalks into a pot and then did nothing except water it once a month. And it's beautiful and growing. It's just,
perfect.
You know. That's a plant for you. That's
yes,
a heather plant.
That's a heather plant. Until, you know, I get better at this. And the nice thing is the new place I'm moving to might have earth I can play with out front. So we'll see.
Are you kidding me? They're going to let you turn me into a gardener.
Yeah, I think so.
Wow.
Yes, yes. Well, I think if I was a landlord and someone was like, well, I'm the producer for this gardening show, and they gave me all these lovely plants and great soil and awesome tips. Mind if I play with your dirt? Okay. Gee, okay.
I'm trying to look up that calancho. I don't remember the exact name of it, and I'm sure I can track it down online. Oh, here, is this it? Where's the calancho? There's calancho.
Do you have a lot of winterizing to do with the plants at home? Bring them all inside, and then what processes do you have to go through?
Yeah, there's just so many. And I tend to they're all over the yard. And some of them get hidden. And some of them are really big. And moving them is not the easiest thing in the world, getting them in the door. And then you got to, as we talked about in one of the spots earlier in the day, well, Sid's is talking about it now, about how you got to check for bugs and things on them, because they'll, at this time of year, I've noticed pretty much every year, there are a lot of white flies in the yard. And you don't want to drag those into the house, because then now you're dealing with them for months, trying to get rid of them.
Get them out.
So that, do yourself a favor if you've got outdoor plants. Give them a once-over. One of the things you can do is just hose them down, or you can put the treatment like the Triple Action Plus that Sids has been talking about. It's basically neem oil, and it smothers those pesky little guys. But just check them out and make sure you're not dragging in things that are going to make your life miserable for the next 6 months while you're, you know, before you can take your plants out again. So anyway, words of advice. All right, we're going to move on to our talk about Hackmatack, and Heather will take care of that for me, but it's fall decorating time at Sid's Greenhouses and Garden Center. And this week the savings are mumtastic. I like that word. Sid's sold out the first several crops of fall garden mums, but a new batch has just arrived at their stores. They're all on sale, from the popular grab-and-go size all the way up to the majestic Sid's Awesome Garden Mum. In addition, you'll save 50% on their entire stock of fall and Halloween decor, up to 75% on all remaining nursery stock, and perennials are buy one, get one free. There's still time to plant spring-blooming fall bulbs. Sid's has a huge selection available. They have all the favorite varieties of tulips, daffodils, iris, and more. Plant them now for a spectacular color display next spring. And, as I just mentioned, when you bring your houseplants in from the patio, don't bring in any bugs or fungus. You can pre-treat them with Fertilome Triple Action Plus. It's an organic insecticide, miticide, and fungicide all in one. Sid's Chicagoland's premier garden centers are located in Palos Hills on Southwest Highway and in Bolingbrook on Napier Plainfield Road at Hassert Boulevard. You can always go online, sidsonline.com. Now, these days, more and more businesses are going green. That's good news. But the growing popularity of green service providers also points to the value of those who have led the way. WRD Environmental is one of those. Since they were formed in 1997, WRD's mission has been to create sustainable landscapes. They have always used locally grown native plants when possible in their design and build projects. They've used recycled, energy-efficient supplies and sought nature's balance. Simply put, being green is part of their DNA. Even their location speaks to their commitment. The Chicago Center for Green Technology, one of the nation's greenest buildings. Their civic contributions towards sustainability run deep. Staff members are on the boards of a variety of green organizations. And through the years, the folks at WRD Environmental have donated their expertise to many green nonprofits. For experienced, sustainable landscape development, trust the professionals at WRD Environmental. And of course, you can find them on the web at WRDEnvironmental.com.
Hey gardeners, want to be inspired? Make plans to visit Cantini Gardens in Wheaton, the 500-acre former estate of Robert R. McCormick. Cantini isn't just beautiful, it's a horticultural masterpiece. Stroll through the spectacular formal gardens created by renowned landscape architect Franz Lipp and marvel at the sheer variety of annuals, perennials, ground covers, trees, and shrubs. You'll love Cantini's Idea Garden, Rose Garden, and Native Prairie, too. Cantini has something for everyone, including museums, picnic area, gift shop, and restaurants. Plan your visit today at cantini.org.
Okay, folks, look who's back on the Mike Novak Show. It's an old sponsor, and they're back again. Grand Street Gardens, right in the middle of Chicago at 2200 West Grand at Levitt. At Grant Street, you're going to find a great fall selection of pumpkins and gourds, not to mention fall plants like mums, cabbage, kale, asters, and more. Did I mention that their selection of trees, shrubs, and perennials are 25 to 50% off for the remainder of the season? But here's another reason to shop at Grant Street Gardens. the birds you love to feed, protect, and watch in your yard during the cold winter months. If you're a backyard bird watcher, stop in today for bird food and supplies. Now, when they were with us last year, what I would say is, you know what? A lot of you want to take the shortcut home, especially if you live in the city. You don't want to get stuck on the Kennedy. So sometimes you shoot down Grand Avenue and to wherever you're going. And that's the place. As you blow past Grand Street Gardens, stop in this time. I mean, you're going to see the explosion of color on Grand Street. Stop in, take advantage of the fall sales, take advantage of getting your birding supplies, and stop in and say, Mike Novak sent you. Grand Street Gardens, 2200 West Grand at Levitt in the city of Chicago. This is the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk AM and FM, and I'm just a quick reminder, we're on iTunes! Woohoo! And that all got done. You know, if you haven't been to my website for a while, go to the podcast page. Did you go up there and see how bright and shiny and all the new stuff we have?
Oh, yes. There? Oh, yes, I've posted it. I've put links on your Facebook, my Facebook, on Twitter. We should be just a mouse click away from greatness.
Yeah, we are. And people who want to download a show and they don't have time to listen online or listen when we're live can put it on the iPod. And like I said, you could type in, I don't know, the Rolling Stones, or you could type in Mike Novak on the iTunes.
You know, you are the first thing that leaps to my mind after I think Mick Jagger. Mick Jagger, Mike Novak, and the list goes on.
And Chuck Lavelle.
Chuck Lavelle. See, it all comes back round.
Wait.
Everyone likes to hug a tree.
I just have to play that real quick.
That was one of the coolest gardening meets rock and roll moments of my life when we did that with Chuck.
Oh, yeah? All right. You mean this?
All right, take care.
Can I get a little, like, this is Chuck Lavelle, piano extraordinaire, tree farmer extraordinaire, and you're listening to the Mike Novak Show and Chicago's Progressive Talk.
Chicago's Progressive.
Yes, sir.
Hi, this is Chuck Lavelle, a keyboard player with the Rolling Stones and also a tree farmer, and you are listening to the Mike Novak.
Mike Novak.
Novak, thank you. Okay, sorry. Hi, this is Chuck Lavelle, keyboard player with the Rolling Stones and a tree farmer and a lover of trees. And you, my friends, are listening to the Mike Novak Show on Progressive Talk Radio.
On Chicago's Progressive Talk.
I wasn't pushy or anything.
No, you can. On Chicago's Progressive Talk.
We're the only one, baby. Thank you very much.
That was so my nervous laugh. Like, I just told Chuck Lavelle. Oh,
that's
God.
Right. Yeah.
I'm like, please don't be mad at me.
You beat up on the guy.
I didn't beat up on him. He has to say your name right.
You gave him his marching orders.
Well, if he wants to promo his book on his show, on our show,
but
he says your name right.
Sometimes you got to shock the monkey, right?
I guess so. Do they have those in wildlife refuges? Shocked monkeys?
Yeah, and every now and then you just...
Fun with buttons, folks.
I know it.
Can't say we don't have fun here on the Mike Novak Show.
Oh, absolutely.
773-838-9278 if you want to, you know, laugh at us.
All right, let's go to our guest who's been waiting patiently on line one. And Cindy, how are you?
Hi, Mike. Yes, fine. Good morning.
Good morning to you, Cindy Skrukrud. Close enough.
Perfect.
It was it?
Yep.
Yumpinyimini Skrukrud. It's Norwegian.
Yep.
In one of the scariest names ever that I've had to pronounce on this show. And I've managed to butcher quite a few names. The scary part with me is that the ones I butcher the worst are my own heritage, the Polish names. I don't know what it is about that. But
yeah, they're a little tough.
Yes, they are. Because there's no vowels. There's just consonants.
Don't scare me even with my last name.
But Cindy is... one of the friends of Hackmatack, which is, well, it's a dream, isn't it, Cindy?
Yep. It's a dream that we hope becomes a reality.
I love the thing you wrote, and I borrowed from it for, I don't know if you've been to my website to this week's show. I've got all the information up there about the effort to create the Hackmatack National Wildlife Refuge. Which would, as I said before, straddle the border between Illinois and Wisconsin. But I loved the thing you wrote for a publication, and you said that in 2003, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife National Refuge System celebrated its 100th anniversary, and Audubon Magazine boasted that a wildlife refuge is located within an hour's drive of every major metropolitan area. Except it wasn't true.
Yeah, not true for the Chicago area.
No, the closest ones were Horicon National Wildlife Refuge, which I've been up to is just fabulous. It's really fun, and the Upper Mississippi National Wildlife and Fish Refuge in Savannah, Illinois. But they're both about 150 miles from Chicago.
Yep. Yeah.
So you'd have to be driving pretty fast to get there in an hour.
yeah, especially in Chicago, getting out of Chicago traffic.
It takes you an hour to go about four blocks in Chicago. So what is the genesis of this? Obviously, it's a lot of environmentalists up your way who have been looking at this question for a long time. And how did it get to the point where the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service is now interested?
Well, it was just, we do have a lot of people who really love the landscape along the Illinois-Wisconsin border, and we just feel that this is such a beautiful area. We'd like to protect more habitat in our area, and we started looking about how could we, bring more players into that effort, and we came up with the idea of, hey, this would be a great place for a national wildlife refuge.
But it's not like it's pristine and you can just carve it out. There's people up there. There's homes. I assume there's cities and
towns and
towns and cows.
Yeah. So it's one of the things that the Fish and Wildlife Service has now is an urban refuge policy where they want to establish refuges closer to metropolitan areas. And that means the refuges aren't going to be like the ones that they establish out in North Dakota or Wyoming, hundreds of thousands of acres in one big parcel. Likely, if they do, and we hope they say, yes, we want to establish a refuge here, it'll likely be in pieces, probably linkages to try and link up with the conservation lands that have already been protected in the area by Illinois Department of Natural Resources, Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources, the Conservation District. McHenry County has a conservation district, which is a slightly different version of a forest preserve district, and we've protected a lot of lands on a county scale. And so I think we anticipate that the Hackmatack Refuge would be, a number of pieces, conservation corridors, green infrastructure linking with other already protected lands in the area.
I hate to interrupt you because you're so eloquent, Cindy. On Twitter, somebody just wrote, "What's in the water over at Mike Novak this morning?" So, and Heather, of course, says organic sugar. I don't know.
You guys were having fun.
Yeah, we are, and I'm glad you're here. And that whole idea, it sounds like pulling this all together, because you have so many different elements, is going to be a Herculean task. Because you've had to go to, I imagine, folks who live in the area and say, hey, we'd like to put you in the refuge. I mean, how did they respond to that?
Well, yeah, I mean, people, you know, there's right now the Fish and Wildlife Service has a big circle, a big study area, and it's 55 square miles. So, of course, people say, what?
Yeah, and it's 350,000 acres.
Yeah, yeah. But that's just the study area where they're looking to see, you know, are there parcels of land in there? We certainly have remnant oak savannas, remnant prairies. We've got high-quality streams that run through the area, wetlands. They're looking to see where are the important pockets, remaining remnants of biology, where would it be good to make linkages, and then they would, if they say, yes, it's a good idea to establish a refuge here, they'd establish a much smaller boundary in which they could acquire land. But they don't come in and take people's land. They only buy land from willing sellers. So it would be a new opportunity for folks in the area. If they were in the area where the Fish and Wildlife Service says, hey, we might be interested in buying your land to help, you know, restore prairie or restore wetlands, people then have a potentially willing buyer.
That's Cindy Skrickrud, who is with Friends of Hackmatack, which is the proposed National Wildlife Refuge, northern Illinois, southern Wisconsin. If somebody doesn't want to move but they support it, would it be possible then that their land would be in the refuge?
You know, only if they have identified that they would want to be part of the refuge. Mm-hmm. So they have options that, you know, if they're interested in selling their land, that and if the Fish and Wildlife Service is interested in buying it, that they could sell it. Folks who wanted to put a conservation easement on their land and remain there, but have the land managed for wildlife habitat, that's another option.
Mm-hmm.
But people that aren't interested can continue to doing what they're doing. Farmers can continue to farm. Municipalities can continue to annex land and, you know, rezone it for development. The only, only lands that the Fish and Wildlife Service buys will they then, you know, presumably put it back into land for wildlife habitat.
So given what we have to start with and that it's already been divvied up quite a bit, there's not going to be just this, as you mentioned earlier, this huge block that's going to be there, but it's going to be gerrymandered, it seems to me that, you know, even if the Wildlife Service says we want to do this, the lines they draw that encompass the refuge would be pretty interesting.
Yeah, that's what we anticipate. I mean, what they're doing, the point that they're at right now is in April they said, yes, we will study the idea of establishing a refuge in this area. Right now they're working to put together what's called an environmental assessment where they evaluate different alternatives. One of the alternatives will be, no, we're not going to put a refuge here. And then we presume they'll look at, you know, different amounts of land that might become part of the refuge. And then that environmental assessment they anticipate will be, you know, ready for public review, you know, sometime next spring, next summer, and folks will get an opportunity to comment on that then. But we don't know what it's going to look like, but we certainly know they're saying that it is going to be most likely be bits and pieces here and there.
I guess we should answer a very simple question here, and that is, what makes a refuge different from a park, a preserve, a prairie, you know, any of these, a state park? How is a refuge different?
Well, so a refuge is one managed, owned and managed by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. And their main mission is to have this national network of lands that are that are designed to provide a habitat for fish and birds and other wildlife. So the National Wildlife Refuge System is primarily designed to provide wildlife habitat. But refuges also welcome people, and the kinds of activities that are allowed on National Wildlife Refuges are hunting, fishing, wildlife watching, photography, environmental education, environmental interpretation.
I think some people would be surprised if they're not familiar with the concept that hunting and fishing are allowed on a refuge.
Yeah, that's what makes them different than from, say, the national park system.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, it's interesting. I had a home out in the Pacific Northwest, a vacation place for about 17 years in the state of Washington, and it was on a lake, and there were four jurisdictions that surrounded the lake. The south side of the lake was National Forest. On the north side of the lake was National Park. On the west side of the lake was an Indian reservation, the Quinault tribe. And on the east side was homesteaded land, open land for development, but not very large area, but a small area, because there's so much national park and national forest around there. Now, of course, in the national park, you couldn't hunt, do anything like that. But the national forests in America were originally developed so you could manage the resources, meaning use them. And in large areas, trees are still cut, and there's hunting and fishing and that sort of thing. So it sounds like a refuge fits more in line with the national forest than it would a national park.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, they all have their own kind of specific niches that they're filling, and the refuge system is, you know, designed to provide habitat for wildlife, but that certainly then provides habitat for things that, you know, people hunt and fish. They certainly provide stopover places for migrating birds, including waterfowl, ducks that folks will go out and hunt. So, yeah, it's got, you know, they all have a different mission, and you know, one of the things that the Fish and Wildlife Service staff have talked about is if they do decide to establish a refuge in this area, that they would cooperatively work with the conservation organizations that have already protected land in the area. So they'd work cooperatively with the Illinois and Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources and the local conservation districts and forest preserve districts. The ownerships of those lands won't change at all either. They'll remain as they are. You know, mm-hmm. Chain of Lakes State Park in northwestern Lake County will remain as Chain of Lakes. But they anticipate that the Fish and Wildlife Service would work with the restoration and land management staff from those different state and local bodies to cooperatively manage lands for wildlife habitat, which would be a great boost to have folks working together. You know, the whole idea of Chicago wilderness green infrastructure is that we want to provide more wildlife corridors and linkages.
All right, and you know, we should talk about why, because there are some species that could truly benefit from this. I don't know if you were listening earlier, but I had Randy Blankenhorn from Go To 2040, and, you know, you're certainly part of that whole effort to look forward in the Chicago region and preserve open space. So hang on a second, Cindy. We'll get back, because I want to talk about whooping cranes and other critters out there. And more importantly, the reason you're on is because there are some hearings coming up this week, and there's a way that you can have your voice heard about Hakmatack National Wildlife Refuge. We'll be back with Cindy Skrukrud in just a second. Here's a tip from the Care of Trees. Wait a second. I already did that tip. Let's do this tip. And I'm sure I sound like a broken record. I'm sure I sound... I'm sorry. because yeah, I just had to do it. Because, you know, sometimes, Heather, you have to.
Oh, no dear. More coffee for you.
I know. Cut me off now. All right. I'm talking about watering your trees as we head into winter. It's been a dry autumn. And while that little rain event we had this week was certainly welcome, it didn't hydrate the soil as much as you think, as Rick DeMaio said earlier. If you planted trees this year, or if they're 1 or 2 years old, they might be experiencing drought stress. A lot of folks forget that even after a tree has dropped its leaves in the fall, the root system is still active. Our advice, get out the drip hose. Lay it at the base of your trees and shrubs and let it trickle for as long as a couple of hours. And do it until the ground is frozen. Christy Weber was here last week and said, yeah, you know, if it's the holidays, I'm trying not to do a Christy Weber impersonation, but, you know, I say if it's Thanksgiving and you got the turkey in the oven, and it's set, go out and put the drip hose on the trees. Maybe even at Christmas. Make the care of trees your permanent partner in enhancing the value of your landscape. Invite the certified arborist at the Care of Trees to take a look at your yard. See thecareoftrees.com or call 847-394-4220. 847-394-4220. The Care of Trees. Their business is people and their love for trees. Now, this is the point. Can you give me a spooky laugh there, Heather?
Sort of. Not really.
No, not really.
Much better.
How's that? All right. Halloween is just around the dark, spooky corner, and before we get there, stop at Lurby Landscape and Garden Center and in Des Plaines at 2550 East Dempster. Make sure you stock up on all your pumpkins, corn stalks, and gourds. Or time to carve the pumpkin. Put it out there on the porch with the little candle so that it burns the top of the little lid that you've cut.
I don't use those, candles. I actually cut a little hole in the back and run Christmas lights.
I'm old school. And it's a candle.
There's no fire hazard that way.
Yeah, maybe, yeah.
Then they even have the ones now that you can put like a little battery in and it looks like a tea light, but it's a little light. You turn it on and it flickers.
Ooh.
And it's very safe for little fingers. So if you're an adult and you want to play with fire, go right ahead. If you have little ones around that are like just mesmerized by jack-o'-lanterns,
you're right.
Go with the electric light and be safe.
See? Mom speaks. Lurvy's has some scary discounts this week, 20 to 75%. So make sure you have your fall planting list in hand. Take advantage of their fresh stock, which they still get in, from hydrangeas and pine trees to evergreen topiaries and bulbs and mums, pansies, cabbage, and kale. And with a $25 purchase, you'll receive a free bag of Bayer tree and shrub planting mix. Trick or treat. And Lurvy still has a good stock of the hottest perennial in town, the hot pink Invincibel Spirit Hydrangea, the first ever pink Annabelle Hydrangea, which some are calling the most important breeding breakthrough of the decade. Well, you know, among certain circles anyway. So get your Halloween fall planting needs checked off your list by checking in at Lurvy Landscape Supply and Garden Center at 2550 East Dempster in Des Plaines, just off of 294. They're just east of that. For hours and more information, visit lurveys.com, lurveys.com.
Spending more time at home these days? Give yourself some room. Renovate your basement or attic. You'll increase your living space and your home's resale value, too.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687 for your remodeling needs, including additions, renovations, and other home improvements. Rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
Bobex wants you to disguise your spring bulbs before you plant them this fall. We're not talking about putting on a wig, a dress, and high heels like in the Looney Tunes cartoons. It works for me, but that's a different story. I'm talking about dunking them in Bobex. You know, there is something in the water here today.
There is.
You
had your silly pills this morning.
I really did. Bobex R formula creates an anaerobic barrier around the bulb and prevents critters like voles and squirrels from discovering them. Here's how you do it. Immerse spring blooming bulbs in concentrated Bob XR right out of the bottle. Allow the bulbs to soak for 3 to 5 minutes. Remove the bulbs from the concentrate and allow them to air dry. Then you pop those babies in the ground. Bob X is harmless to humans, pets, birds, and aquatic life. It contains no petrochemicals, and it's made from natural and recycled ingredients. Of course, always read and follow label directions. Bob X is available only at your local independent garden center, and you can always order it online. And if you call Bob X, you're going to talk to a real, live human being. Unbelievable! You can find Bob X products at Thistle Stop Garden Shop in Yorkville, Illinois, Ferraro Garden Spot in Northbrook, Illinois, Seasons Garden Center in Alton, Illinois. Remember, plants thrive and survive with Bob X. Yeah, it's still the Mike Novak Show for another 5 minutes, and then they're really going to run me out on a rail. Let's go back really quickly to our conversation with Cindy Skrukrud, who's with Friends of Hackmatack. We just got a tweet, Cindy, you'd be happy to hear. Openlands fully supports the creation of this refuge. We are one of the few urban centers without a wildlife refuge nearby. So that came in from – did that come in from Scott? Okay, who's listening to the show. Thanks, Scott. Appreciate that.
Yeah, Open Lands has been a great supporter, a great assistant to the local Friends of Hackmatack group in moving this dream forward.
And there are a number of species there that would be affected, some of them endangered, some of them in trouble. One of the big, you know, poster child would be the whooping cranes.
Yep, that North America's biggest bird on the federally endangered species. Unfortunately, you know, that we really, the population of that bird has been really reduced. That right now there was only one migrating flock that migrates from Canada to Texas, and now there's an effort underway to reestablish a new migrating flock in the eastern U.S., migrating from Wisconsin down to Florida. And folks have probably seen the Operation Migration efforts. They use ultralight aircraft and people dressed in whooping crane costumes to train, you know, juvenile whooping cranes to make that first migration from Wisconsin down to Florida.
And this might be a place that they can stop over this refuge.
Yep, we're right in their flyway. We've already had whooping cranes that have stopped down a number of times at Glacial Park, a county park out in McHenry County. So we definitely need to be restoring more wetland habitat for these birds and other migrating birds so they can stop and rest and feed on their migration path. So, we're really excited that we would have an opportunity to improve habitat for whooping cranes in the bi-state area.
So if you're interested in this, go to Friends of Hackmatack, and that's Hackmatack, NWR.org. Or if you can't remember that and you don't know how to spell Hackmatack, although it's pretty much like it sounds, go to my website, MikeNovak.net. This week's show, I've got the link to Friends of Hackmatack. This Wednesday, October 20th, from 4 to 8 p.m., there's a hearing at Bristol Municipal Building in Bristol, Wisconsin. And on Thursday, the 21st, from 4 to 8, the city of Lake Geneva, City Hall, is where the hearing is going to be. But you don't have to show up there. You can go online. The USFWS, the Wildlife Service, has a website where you can make comments. And I've got the link to that, too. And, I hope, Cindy, that a lot of people get on board who are interested in this. It would be such a great thing for our region.
Oh, yeah. Thanks, Mike, for putting that word out to your listeners. Because the Fish and Wildlife Service is asking people to weigh in by November 1st. So I really urge people, if they didn't make it out to the meetings in Illinois last week and can't go to the ones in Wisconsin this coming week, to
please go get on and send an email of support.
That sounds great. Thank you, Cindy, for being on the program, and good luck with the effort.
Hey, thanks, Mike. Have a great day.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, that's it for today. We'll see you next week when we might even... And all we've got to say is go green
or go home.
We'll see you next week.